With me on the line is Jen Ellingsworth, editor of the Beach Paper and arts and entertainment editor for the Cape Gazette newspaper, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
An all-around super cool editor to have.
Thank you.
And fellow 80s stenographer like myself.
Right on.
Sex and the City on its opening weekend. You being a, would you say, quasi fan?
I would say pretty rabid fan.
Okay, rabid fan. That's fantastic because that puts us at two polar opposites. The premise for this, the gist of me approaching this film being a non-fan, is that if they were to keep this as a film just for the rabid fans like yourself, then they probably would have stayed at HBO and made a two-hour special. But because they have opened this up to a theatrical venue, then they've opened themselves up to critiquing from a theatrical standpoint.
Yes,
you agree?
I agree.
Okay.
I totally agree.
So, you've seen the film. Basically, I want your opinion upon walking out of it. You went to see this with your mother, is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And was she also a fan?
No, she has never seen, I think she's seen snippets of episodes, but never a whole Sex and the City episode.
Okay.
She certainly knows the characters just from the media and, you know, just pop culture and things like that. But she loved it. I think it was just a piece of confection. I mean, it was just spun sugar. It has no nutritional value whatsoever, but it was just fun. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, great. I'm glad you said that.
For entertainment value.
For entertainment value. And my thought process on this is kind of like, for guys, movies like The Transformers have their explosions and guns, and this is kind of the estrogen-filled antithesis of a male-oriented blockbuster, in that, you know, the explosions come in the form of Louis Vuitton bags, and, you know, the guns come in the form of 3-inch stiletto heels.
The Manolo Blahniks, yes.
See, I don't even know how to pronounce it, and that's why I was hoping you would say it, because I have no idea
you
even how to pronounce
it. You are going to have to Google that name, trust me.
I am so fashionably challenged, it's sad. But that's a good place to start with this movie, because it is so fashion conscious. And because my fashion can literally be found in the back of magazines where you can buy the T-shirts with sayings from the 80s on them, this looked like not even a fashion show, but I swear to God, it looked like I was at the Cirque du Soleil. I mean, it looked like, really, like some of the best fashion designers in the country all got together and vomited up the worst aberrations of fabric that they could onto these women.
Oh, absolutely, I agree. I mean, the bird in the hair of the one scene, which I don't want to spoil the movie for people who have not seen it, but that to me was just, deplorable. I totally agree with that. But some of the things were very, very cute, Rob.
Okay.
Maybe
okay.
Not for those of all us right. Here in the Cape region, but...
I'm going to guess that really it has nothing to do with regions of the country, but rather regions on the body of whether or not you're going to enjoy this film. Because my feeling is that I think a lot of guys were drugged through misty eyes as they passed by the Iron Man, Indiana Jones marquee and had to be seated in there with Carrie Bradshaw and her friends. So
yes.
Go over a little bit about the premise of this film.
It was basically revisiting the girls, the four girls, Charlotte, Miranda, Carrie, and Charlotte, Miranda, Carrie, Samantha. Samantha, who looks fabulous, and she's 50 in the movie. I don't know how old Kim Cattrall is in real life, but in the movie she is celebrating her 50th birthday, and she looks phenomenal.
Hey, she's the mannequin.
Yeah, she is the mannequin, right. But it's basically, you know, catching up with these women 4 years after the series ended to see where they are in their life and or their lives. Basically, the whole plot revolves around Carrie and Big, her on-again, off-again love interest, who in the movie get engaged. And I'm not going to say anything else about that, but it follows their new...
They fall in and out of love.
Yeah, exactly. They've had a tumultuous 10-year relationship, so it's kind of seeing... you know, what the next step is for that, you know, and babies and jobs and things like that ensue for the foursome.
All right. So this was, I guess, a continuation, really, of a series that had its finale. For you as a fan, was it a big payoff? I mean, did the series end it and on such a note where you were, you know, that this wrapped everything up in a nice tidy bow? Or was it something that was just kind of felt like a few more episodes that you got a chance to spend time with old friends?
I felt like it was a few more episodes, quite honestly. At the series end,
there's a lot of more episodes, let's say. 2.5 freaking hours, come on! It was like Dances with Martinis. It was like, you know, this epic movie. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
I know, it's like, what next? The 2.5 hour movie of the 2.5 Men series.
Oh God, yeah. Five and a Half Men.
I was like, come on, let's just wrap it up. Come on, I mean, how much more can you take? Yeah, it felt like, to me, it felt like a very, very long episode. Or okay. If I had rented the box set of a season of episodes.
Because that's the one thing that really got to me is that I'm watching this and it felt like I was watching a sitcom almost, or a dramedy, I guess would be the better term, mm-hmm. because it didn't feel cinematic to me. I mean, New York has looked better mm-hmm. after it was leveled by aliens in Independence Day. For having City in the title, it didn't feel like it really showcased the beauty of New York City. And it just Mm-mm. felt very kind of confined and cramped, and there wasn't really much flair as far as from a cinematic perspective.
I could definitely see that point. They were trying to shoehorn so much into those 2.5 hours, also with everything that happened over how many years was Sex and the City on television?
10 years, I think it is.
Yeah, they tried to just really cram everything in there, and I don't know if everything from those 10 years, that decade, was meant to be in that movie, but I saw a lot of it. I can't think of anything they left out.
The term excess comes to mind in every sense of the word, at least for me mm-hmm. in this film, not just the materialism of the leads, very materialistic, so driven by, they solved crises by retail therapy or alcoholism.
It's true, I know. That is Sex and the City.
Okay. Okay. And
like
again,
I said,
this is just...
You hit the nail on the head when you said, if you are a tried and true Sex and the City fan and you go for that alone, you will really enjoy this movie because they've done right by the TV series. But does it belong on big screen? I don't know. For me, it was good because I did watch the series. I still do. Whenever it's on TV, I can't tear myself away from the reruns. Even though I've seen them all at least 5 times.
So this is kind of like an estrogen-filled Seinfeld for you then, right?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Yes.
As far as the product placement in this film, was the series as filled with name-dropping as there was in this? Because honestly, it seemed like there was some sort of something being hawked every few minutes of this film, whether it's a designer name or mineral water or the name of a restaurant, or everybody had something to pimp out in this.
The movie was shameless in that respect. The series, not so much. You did have the Louis Vuittons and, you know, the obligatory Chanel references in there, but not as much as, like, you know, the vitamin water, like you said.
Vogue magazine,
you know, wow.
I just felt like, you know, as episodic as it was, I felt like almost they were going to break it up and say, well, this section brought to you by the wonderful folks at Louis Vuitton. You know, it seemed like it had that, you know, that shameless plugging in there. And I didn't know if the series was the same way, but this, it definitely
not
felt
so
that
much.
Way.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there were elements of that, but not like at every turn, you know, something with a brand on it. The movie was much more so.
As far as the comedy was concerned in this, at times I honestly felt like maybe they had the Farrelly brothers stop in and direct some of it. In specific, there was an instance in which one of the characters, Miranda, I believe, the lawyer, and probably, I have to say, of Miranda, she is probably the most overpaid lawyer I have ever seen because I never saw her do any work, but she always complained about it.
Complains about work, but she takes off a week from Mexico.
Exactly, yes. Really tough job she's got. Yeah. But there was one particular scene with Miranda in which she is rather negligent in, let's say, landscaping.
yes.
Of
I'm
the body.
With that scene.
It seemed like a very broad style comedy, you know, kind of the where it wanted to play with the sexy shenanigans of mm-hmm. the Farrelly brothers. That and between mm-hmm. that and that goddamn little dog humping everything.
Everything, yeah. That was pretty, I've got to give you that one. That was pretty bad.
I mean, I get it. The first time, mildly cute, seen it in a million times, it's kind of like the go-to laugh. It's kind of like a fart.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you don't have something funny, you throw in either an old lady cussing, someone passing gas, or a dog humping something.
That's just the standby. That's the standby.
It is. For me, it's just people falling. I love to watch people fall.
Oh, and who doesn't? I mean, that America's Funniest Home Videos has built an empire on that. That alone, you know.
That and various objects to the male groin, which I also think Sex and the City had a lot to do with as well. But that's another point altogether. The women of the film, and again, this is from someone who has not spent any time with them. But in that time, in that 2.5 hours that I spent with them in the darkened theater, they seemed so shallow and narcissistic and materialistic that I didn't feel that I could find anything worth merit for these girls. And I'm hoping that the series preceding this helped to flesh them out. But for a newcomer, the movie certainly did not.
I can totally understand what you're saying. My whole point is, as a viewer, even for the first time, which my mom basically was today, you have to look at it sort of like that cell phone that Carrie Bradshaw had in the movie that she, you know, does away with. It's pretty and it's shiny, but really the pretty and shininess, it really doesn't mean anything. And it's not meant to mean anything. It's just like a escapism. I don't know, maybe the cell phone analogy doesn't work. Take it for what it's worth, you know, which may not mean a lot. But it was just like eye candy. The clothes, the fashions, even the music, even the soundtrack, even the, I would buy that music.
Yeah, I'll give it props because it did do the Run DMC Aerosmith Walk This Way. Mm-hmm. I'll give it props for that.
Yeah, and there were like, there are, you know, strewn throughout the movie, little nuggets of things that only people who had watched it since the beginning would really get. But I think a lot of that movie could have ended up on the editing floor.
One of the things that really tipped the scale was there was a scene in which, let's see, Samantha bids on a diamond ring. Mm-hmm. And this diamond ring is that something that she wanted. Okay. And then her, you know the scene I'm talking about.
Exactly.
And it turns out she gets outbidded by another anonymous person who is phoning in his or her bids over the phone. And I'm not giving away any big reveal. And the last thing I want to do is face the angry wrath of Sex and the City viewers who say, oh, you gave away a spoiler. The diamond ring ends up, it was her boyfriend at the time. And she's pissed that he bought the diamond ring for her because it's something that she wanted to buy for herself. It was kind of this feminist stance. What really kind of struck me with this is that her whole stance was built on the fact that, yes, she was going to buy it for herself, but with the money she earns from being this guy's manager. So essentially, it's his money anyway.
Oh, see, now you're looking way too much into it.
Okay, all right. Maybe it is.
I wasn't particularly enamored of that whole storyline of Samantha. I mean, Samantha is the most appealing character on the series anyway. She's just like, she has the best lines and the best, I mean, a lot of sex with a lot of different men, which makes it very interesting. But, you know, I get what they were going for in that. They were trying to make her, because in the series she's very independent, and not only until I think the final season does she get the boyfriend that she has in the movie. So I think she's trying to say, you know, throughout all of her girlfriend's relationship crises, she was taking from it, you know, that she also has lost herself in this relationship and now depends on this man who she represents as his agent and all this stuff. But again, I think, like you had just pointed out, that I think it'll be lost on a lot of people, and they just look at it as like, what the hell is her problem? Why is she being so bitchy and not just taking this ring from this man because he loves her?
Right. And apparently, and believe me, I did my research on this. Entertainment Weekly put out an entire volume dedicated to former Sex and the City, and I read every single damn episode guide. So I wanted to make sure that I know. I wanted to make sure that I knew my stuff going in here, because I knew the wrath that I would face if I were just a tad too harsh on this. It seemed to me that from a male perspective, there was a very anti-romantic vibe in this movie. For as Cinderella story as it wanted to be, there seemed to be this entire undercurrent of how romance really is kind of a fallacy.
They do eventually get to the point at the end where it's all kind of, they wrap it up nicely, I think.
Right.
But they could have wrapped it up a little sooner.
Definitely could have done that.
Especially, you know, like I said, I've sat through 45 minutes of previews, which was unprecedented. I don't know where. I mean, that is just...
Yeah, that was...
It was tiring.
The 2.5 hours was all the dedication I could persevere anyway, so I'm glad that it didn't last too much longer than that. I laughed inappropriately. Mr. Big gets cold feet, and like he has for the past 10 years, apparently. And there's this scene where he's talking to her on the phone, and she drops the phone, and it's in slow motion, and it's, I swear to God, it's so, I laughed because it was like one of those moments where the Vietnam guy sees his buddy get shot, and it's a slow motion reaction of, no, you know, and that's what that felt like, and it just cracked me up, because I was like,
yeah,
my God, this is just a conversation that they're, you know, not on the same level with, but
right,
it has nothing
right.
to do with all the histrionics that are accompanying her with this. So, I don't know. That
yeah,
just made me laugh inappropriately.
That was pretty funny. There was a lot of inappropriate laughter in my theater that I was in because there were a lot of men in there looking very disgruntled because they had been dragged in by their significant others to endure the 2.5 hours.
Now, the one other thing that irked me, not one other thing, there were many, but let's talk just for a second. There's a new character that was introduced, and it was Carrie Bradshaw, Sarah Jessica Parker's character, takes on an assistant.
Yes.
Jennifer Hudson plays her assistant, Jennifer Hudson of Dreamgirls.
Beautiful.
And Oscar nominated, I should add.
I was shocked to see her in that. I had no idea that was coming.
Personally, I was disappointed because here you have this Oscar-nominated actress who I felt was put in there to say, hey, look, let's try and pick up the black market, too.
Yeah, exactly. I thought the same thing. And, you know, at one point, and then here I go again, trying not to be the spoiler, but I don't think it will give away too much if I say at one point, Sarah Jessica's Carrie Bradshaw gives her a rather extravagant gift. And, I mean, it was so schmaltzy. Again, saying that from the fan standpoint, you know, totally tried and true, love the movie, but that was a little too much.
She says, "You gave me my life," and then to her assistant, and her assistant says, "You gave me a Louis Vuitton," and
that
to me was it essentially really summed up kind of the mentality of these four women, is that their life can essentially be kind of neatly compacted into a handbag and toted away as long as the chihuahua would fit in it.
Exactly. Things, you know, thing envy, a lot of shoes, you know, a lot of everything. Excess.
From a straight male perspective, I can say that I probably would not walk but run to the other side of the street if any of these four women were approaching from the opposite direction, because I felt as though these were four women, at least based upon this film, this feature-length film, and this is the only time I've spent with them, so they're not as friendly to me as they are to someone like yourself who's watched it. But I could not see myself cozying up to any of these four characters, because there was zip appeal to me, and they seemed, you know, more narcissistic than most leads that I should feel compassion for in a feature film, at least.
Yeah, I think if you spent more time, which you probably will not based on what I'm hearing now, but if you spent time watching some, you know, rent the box set some weekend, you know, get some Cosmos going. No, but seriously, I think this was Sex in the City on steroids.
That's not possible, Jen. The estrogen would immediately squash those steroids like there's no tomorrow.
We'd cancel each other out faster than you could say Stanford Blatch. I've already talked to a few of my friends and told them about it and said, you know, you should check it out. As a fan, you should check it out. Now, somebody who's not that familiar with the series, not so much, you know, put it at the bottom of the Netflix queue.
I would even say, actually, I would go a step further and say, make plans to have kidney stone removal or something. Jen Ellingsworth, any closing comments on Sex in the City, the movie?
I just, you know, like I said, it is, I cannot say enough, confection, no nutritional value, just sex in the city.
I thought that the sex was rather unsexy.
Lackluster, yes.
Yeah, but again, this is why I ambushed you to accompany me on this journey, so that I would at least be buoyed by your positive comments. I was hoping,
yeah.
And would not suffer the wrath as I might expect. So, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rob.
I'll have this on your desk promptly.
Great news.
Thanks, boss. See ya.
Bye.